Welcome to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy podcast. Get inspired. Break through to new dimensions with your entrepreneurial peers on the journey of self-leadership mastery and life success. Reinvent or evolve yourself as you redesign your business. Dual innovation. Take charge of who you next become. Feel more deeply to think, act, lead, and mentor more clearly and more effectively. Learn something new from our conversation today.
Nancy, thank you so much for having me on the show. I've really enjoyed our conversation, and I'm so grateful to you for really giving me the space to talk about my work that I'm so very passionate about.
Welcome to We Mentor Mondays. I'm Nancy. Today's mentor guest is Dr. Amy Bantham of Move to Live More. I invited Dr. Amy Bantham into this conversation to not only get to know her, but to really understand the methodology that she's bringing into working with communities in three different areas, which we'll talk about in a little bit more perspective. We're also in this conversation going to talk about, you know, what can we do as business owners as at some point we're going to be in this post-pandemic planning phase. And so what can we do now to start building in kind of a wellness culture where people are more attuned and asking more about how people are feeling, how they're doing. They're sorting out some of the isolation that people are experiencing, being in remote locations in some cases for their employees. And so how can we kind of keep asking the right questions of people and staying connected with each other? And also from a public health perspective, you know, what is this all going to mean as we, you know, how can we get more active in what we're doing? Hi, Amy. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Nancy. Thank you so much for having me on.
You're welcome. I'm so glad you're here. And Dr. Amy Bantham has 20 years of experience working in consulting, health and fitness, and healthcare. Her mission is to help people live healthier, longer, more active lives. She's the CEO and founder of Move to Live More, which she founded during the pandemic, which we learned in our first conversation. And her research and consulting firm addressing physical inactivity, obesity, chronic disease, and social determinants of health through cross-sector collaboration and innovation are really coming in handy. So Move to Live More services include strategic planning, qualitative and quantitative research, translating research into policy, coalition building, and program design, implementation, and evaluation. So Amy holds a Doctor of Public Health from the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health with concentrations in health communication and obesity epidemiology and prevention. Her doctoral research focused on physician exercise prescriptions / referrals and patient exercise behavior change. She is a certified group exercise instructor, personal trainer, and health and wellness coach. She also holds a Master of Science from Northeastern University, a Master in Public Policy from the Harvard Kennedy School, and a Bachelor of Arts from Yale University. So thank you for being here and helping us kind of sort out what's happening now during the pandemic and how we can plan for wellness in the future. My first question out of the gate is, what do you know thus far about the $1.9 trillion American Rescue Plan and how, from a public health perspective, it's going to impact our health and how do we navigate out of this pandemic?
Yeah, I think that I look at it in terms of short-term solutions and longer-term solutions.
Oh, good.
Short term, we need to help small businesses that are suffering, like restaurants and health and fitness clubs that have been shut down during the pandemic. We need to help working families that are struggling. There are also really specific public health needs that we need to address. I do a lot of COVID pandemic response work at the local level. We are working very hard to get our schools reopened. And I know that there's a lot of money allocated for weekly assurance testing that will test educators and students on a regular basis and help get schools open that aren't currently open. So testing, in addition to all the other mitigation strategies that we have in place, such as mask wearing and physical distancing. I also think there's, of course, money allocated for vaccination, and that's a really key piece of getting our businesses and our schools open again with quick vaccination rollout as we're racing against the variants and making sure that we get people vaccinated in quick time. There's also a longer term public health aspect to the funding, and it's really been gratifying to me to speak with colleagues who work on local public health recently, who are now talking about having funding to plan ahead and to really think through the underfunding of our public health infrastructure over the past several decades, which contributed to how we were able and not able to mount a COVID pandemic response. And so, you know, when we think about public health, if everything's going really well with public health, we don't have to think about it.
But, you know,
when it isn't going well, yeah, it's all that we talk about.
You know, it's the same in business. When you're struggling with cash flow, that's all you talk about. You know, you're focused on where's the next dollar coming from? How can I move the dial from this to this and pay this bill? And you're strategizing when you're paying each bill to keep afloat and when the next dollar's coming in. Whereas the more cash flow that you have to work within your business, the less it's not that you're not thinking about it or planning for it, but it's not an everyday conversation. It's more you can get beyond that. It's kind of like when there's an emergency, you focus on, you know, if you've cut your arm, that's where the focus is to stop the bleeding.
And so
to address that particular wound. And the same with cash flow and same with, it sounds like, with public health is that we're first wanting to stop, you know, the spread of disease.
Yes, we're looking at it through a very narrow infectious disease lens, and it becomes very reactive. It almost becomes like a game of whack-a-mole, or as you describe, you know, where do you stem the blood flow first? And if we can shift into longer term thinking or move outside just a very narrow infectious disease perspective, if we can shift to think about, you know, okay, our schools are closed because we're trying to prevent people from getting COVID. And if we broaden our view to say, okay, you know, we're minimizing the risk of them getting COVID, but we're increasing the risk of them suffering social isolation and mental health, and we're significantly impacting their learning, and the learning loss has been tremendous. And we're significantly, if we take a longer term lens, we're significantly impacting the way that children who have missed out on that learning earn income over the next 40 years of their lives. And so really thinking about long-term views and long-term views of how we improve health outcomes from a community health perspective, how we address health disparities. And I think that your comparison to businesses and cash flow is a very apt one.
Yeah, well, it seemed really fitting. Yeah, and part of the American Rescue Plan, 85% of our U.S. citizens received $1,400 checks. That's a huge number of people that I think that's a beginning to help kind of bridge this short-term deficit. And until we really address the basic needs of the disparities that are in these communities, I just don't think we need to get them thinking long-term as well, right, in our communities. But it's been always, you know, on the short term and what can we do right now? And how do you get politicians to think long term when the whole political system is designed for changeover, turnover? You know, politicians are constantly selling different programs, but I don't get the sense and have an experience that it's over a long period of time where our whole, you know, country is moving towards something more, especially when it comes to public health, in a way that we can agree on.
You hit the nail on the head. This is something that I've struggled with advocacy for the past decade plus. When we're advocating on behalf of health and health outcomes, where investment in a program will reap rewards 10 years out, and the elected official that we're working to convince to vote for it might be out of office in the next 2 years, 3 years, 6 years, and isn't thinking in terms of that long-term time frame. And so this is a struggle I've had with advocating for prevention. Mm-hmm. And investing, we're always thinking about return on investment and investment upfront in someone's health, in a program that will positively impact people's health. And the return is seen many years out. And so how do we bring in the right players, the right people, the individuals, the community players, the healthcare systems, the elected officials who recognize the importance and the need to shift to that long-term systems thinking, that collaboration across the players. So it's not just the elected official making the decision, but it's all the players at the table.
Yeah. And how can small businesses get involved in the longer term planning? So I'm in a city of Golden Valley in Minneapolis, and it's around, I'm forgetting the population, but it's probably around 50,000 people or so. Mm-hmm. And they have a 20-year plan that they've been working mm-hmm. on. And I'm noticing that more cities are kind of doing longer-term plans. Do you think that's part of a solution?
That's interesting. That certainly does. I'm a proud Somerville resident, and I think that we have a model called Shape Up Somerville that dates from decades ago, that really brings in government, it brings in schools, it brings in nonprofits, it brings in public-private partnerships. So the small businesses at the table working to make decisions. I consult to health and fitness studios, really health and fitness studios that are thinking through how critical it is that they are seen as essential to their communities. They're essential to the health and well-being of community residents. They are seen as essential by elected officials, by small businesses that they could collaborate with to improve employee health and well-being. And I think we've seen the downside of not being seen as an essential community resource because health and fitness studios were closed and stayed closed throughout much of the pandemic. And so if they're seen as essential, perhaps they wouldn't be the first to close and last to open. And if they have relationships and connections with other community players, perhaps there would be a recognition of the important role that they play in that they'd be seen more as allied with healthcare and allied health professionals. Can you imagine closing hospitals right now?
Right. Yeah. It just makes no sense.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I do think small business owners need to be at the table.
Yeah, in larger numbers and figuring out where that is. But you can start in your local community, getting to know the school board, getting to know the mayors, and getting to know the other local businesses.
I was just going to add that once there's a problem, it's too late. Small businesses need to build those relationships early on.
So that's part of the long-term view is the other thing with small business, like we've suffered a lot with, and I'm thinking of the dot-com era where there was like a ton of money invested in all these tech companies and then we hit the bubble and imploded. And then we went through this kind of renaissance time with properties and all of a sudden, you know, the push was for everybody to get into homes and change over their ownership of their properties and rebuild and all these mortgages were sold in ways where the consumer was not really informed well enough of what it meant to, you know, these balloon payments coming up for mortgages. And so our whole, you know, country just imploded in the 2008 time frame. And it takes so long to recover from these experiences. I just think like with small business owners, when I'm working with them, it's really looking at, you know, if you did this work for the next 30 years, you know, how can you carve this out? And yes, you need the business planning and the cash flow. And it takes 3 years to really feel like you got your feet on the floor and like you know what you're doing and you know kind of where the sweet spot is of who needs what, your kind of services. So mm-hmm. How do you build out kind of your career a little bit longer when there's a lot of different variables within your business or within your industry? And if you have more of that longer term view, I just think it's easier to be putting plans in place that can get funded.
Yeah, I love that you mentioned a sweet spot because I do think there's short, medium, and long-term planning. And in as it relates to the sweet spot, I actually am part of the teaching team for a persuasion class at the Harvard Kennedy School. And we talk a lot about knowing your audience and what is important to you, what is important to them, and what's the sweet spot, which is what is important to both parties. And I think as it connects to short, medium, and long range planning, it's what's important to you and to them in the short, medium, and long term.
Yes. That's really good. That's excellent. I'm glad that you mentioned that. That's exactly something I could get my head around, you know, and as I'm sure the business owners listening also will be able to kind of relate to that. And if business owners are like trying to build a wellness culture, what would that look like? Like, how do you define wellness? And so let's say we have kind of our communities are moving toward that part and business owners have found a way in which they can connect in their community that builds the relationships that they can leverage over a long period of time and work well and get to know people better. What would their culture of wellness kind of look like?
Yeah. So you asked about how I define wellness. I really use the World Health Organization definition of health and wellness, which I like because it accurately reflects really the focus of my life and my passion for my business. So health and wellness as a state of complete physical, mental, and social well-being. And it's not merely the absence of disease. And so when I think about building a culture of wellness, and I actually worked with a project that was a collaboration between the Harvard Business School and the Harvard School public health. And it was focused on, you know, we're talking about cross-sector collaboration. It was the perfect example of bringing together business and health to change culture. And so we developed a whole course and a course curriculum around building a culture of health. And what exactly does that look like? And I liked the definition that some of the professors that I worked on a particular segment with looked at. They were looking at total worker health. So looking at worker health from a perspective of protection from accidents and injury, so workplace safety. They're talking about it from a disease prevention standpoint. And you know my passion about disease prevention and the fact that we really need to think long-term about preventing disease. And the third piece of this, sort of this three-legged stool, if you will, so protection from injury, prevention of disease. So the third leg is promotion of worker well-being. So health and well-being. And culture is so amorphous, right? It's so hard to quantify. What is culture? How do we change culture? And so there needs to be a measurement aspect as well. So how are you defining culture? And then how do you know if you're doing a good job at changing it?
Right. So you need the evidence-based things that you're tracking.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it comes down to, you know, when we talk in health promotion and promoting healthy eating and active living, we always talk about programs, people, and policies. So what type of programs have you put in place? Who's leading those programs? Do you have a wellness committee that members of your staff sit on? And what to what extent is leadership promoting wellness? I always like when people include on their email, just because I'm sending this email outside of office hours doesn't mean that you need to respond to it outside of office hours. And I like it because it's setting expectations. And I think business owners need to do this of setting, you know, really being a role model for wellness. And yes, I am the first person to admit that I have terrible work-life balance right now. I'm starting my own business or in the first year stage of it. So it's my baby.
Yeah.
It's my fourth child. I live, sleep, breathe it. And I don't have the greatest work-life balance right now, but my goal is to return to work-life balance at some point. And I think it's important for small business owners to model that work-life balance. And so, yeah, maybe they didn't get to the email until midnight, but that doesn't mean that the employee needs to respond at midnight.
Right, right. Yeah, I think that's what I'm taking right away from what you're saying is the setting the expectation, for sure, of when people when you're expecting a response. I don't put that at all. I just put, you know, I just send the emails, but I think that is a really good thing to do.
Yeah, if we're thinking about it's modeling behavior, right? And then I mentioned programs, putting incentive programs in place for healthy eating, active living, prevention, mental health, self-care.
Yeah.
I think if we look at employers really instilling a culture of health in their workplace, really thinking about health as investment, which has a return on investment for the individuals, for the employees, but also for the company.
Yeah. I mean, insurance rates go down,
yep,
you know, if you've got a healthier staff. And also there are incentives that you can put in place for people. I'm forgetting what it's called right now. It's a plan where you where employees can get reimbursed for if they're buying cycling equipment or even the local fitness shop, you know, place some of the tuition. If they visit the gym this many times per month, that their monthly dues are lower. You know, there's all kinds of different little incentives that people can put in place.
That's right. And Minnesota has been a leader in that model for incentivizing wellness. So if you are going to the fitness center, I think it is 8 or 12 times a month, then you're, you know, there's reimbursement. And that's a state model. And we tried to do that nationally as well. And to pass legislation that would incentivize employers and employees across the nation. And so I keep coming back to your comment about the sweet spot. And I do think it's important to think about the sweet spot here of building a culture of wellness, what's important to the company and what's important to the employee. So when you think about productivity, recruitment, retention, you're really talking about what's important to the company. But if you're framing it as we care about our employees' physical and mental health, and we are the type of company that will invest in you and you will reap the rewards of that in terms of better health outcomes, I think that's really an important, that could be an important draw.
Yeah. And I think it could be as simple as if we're having, you know, revenue goals or projects that are, you know, whatever the criteria is of generating income in our businesses, you know, the goals that are set there, that there can also be wellness goals.
Yep.
And right, because people do work better when they're, you know, like you're more likely to work out if you've got a workout buddy.
Absolutely.
And so if a company culture is putting that standard in place, or even asking, what are we doing for mental health, or having a key person who's really into different aspects of wellness. So maybe you don't have somebody totally designated to that because you don't have the funds for that. But maybe you have somebody in your company that's really invested in wellness and does a lot of it. And they can be your wellness person who, you know, has breaks that they take for meditation, you know, midday, or, you know, doing chair yoga, or, you know, these little things that really add up over a period at a time.
I absolutely agree. It could be wellness challenges at certain times of the year. It could be modeling behavior by having walking meetings. It could be exactly as you said, buddying up employees so they work out together. It could be having healthier options in the snack room. It could be, you know, there are a whole host of different as programs, people, and policies that could be implemented that could incentivize and encourage wellness.
Great. All right. Well, that is really helpful to take a look at it from a programs, people, and policy perspective. I think that can be a manageable, concrete way. And looking at short-term goals in wellness and long-term goals and trying to improve the health outcomes in not only ourselves, but also in those around us by providing lots of different options to be well, including expectations on an email whenever you send them. I think that's good.
I like that's one example that I've seen over the year that I've liked, and I don't practice it. I don't follow it. I'm constantly returning emails, but I liked that. It's a nod to the fact that even though I'm up, I don't necessarily expect this of you.
Right. Yeah. It's very, very good. All right. Well, this has just been a real pleasure. I really appreciate that you took the time to kind of give us these tips and keep working hard on your venture. I think you've got a really great idea, and it's a long-term solution to our health and getting the right people at the tables in doing strategic planning and research. And your podcast is fun to listen to and very insightful and informative, and you're focused on leadership in doing those different community activities. You also had on your website a category called Essential Community. Do you want to tell us a little bit about your joint initiative there between you and Tom Richards?
Yeah, sure. That I mentioned it a little bit. This is the consulting that I'm doing with health and fitness clubs to really establish themselves as essential community resources in the eyes of community stakeholders, which include elected officials, businesses, healthcare organizations. And so really developing these cross sector collaborations to improve the health outcomes of the community residents by having small businesses like health and fitness studios at the table.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much. I just appreciate, and I just realized I didn't ask anything. I know that you've got a husband. You know, what's his name? What's he up to in the world?
His name's Ben, and he is a wonderful partner in every way. And he's a software developer focused on technology and education. And so between us, with me focused on health during a public health crisis and him focused on online education during a public health crisis, it's been a very busy year.
Yeah, exactly. And then you also have on your website some activities for kids that I think any parent should check into, because you've got like the lessons for the week.
Yeah, this is something I'm really, really passionate about, getting kids moving and starting at home with my three kids. And when they shut down schools in the spring, and it's now been, I think, 380 days since my kids have set foot in a school, I started developing programs for physically distanced outdoor recess and physical education classes. And I did them every day with my kids. And I thought, why not put them to paper so that other families can use them to keep their kids active and moving during such a challenging time? So Dr. B's activity hour is what you're referring to.
Yeah, I totally love that. I just think it's brilliant.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And Nancy, thank you so much for having me on the show. I've really enjoyed our conversation, and I'm so grateful to you for really giving me the space to talk about my work that I'm so very passionate about.
Thank you so much for being here. And you've given a lot of great tips as well. And I'm sure we'll have you back at another time. So thank you, Mike Cabea, sound engineer, videographer, photographer, mon frère de notre mère, brother from another mother. Yeah, hallelujah. I hear him saying in the background. And thank you for tuning in and listening to another insightful conversation with We Mentor Mondays with Nancy podcast. We'll see you next week. Do you want to build upon your leadership skills and become more effective as a business owner? Do you want to evolve yourself as you redesign your business? This is a dual innovation process. We've been doing this kind of work since 1992, helping small business owners and emerging entrepreneurial leaders with self-leadership mastery, business ownership success, and that leads to life success. We focus on the dual innovation journey of reinventing yourself as you redesign your business. We do this with one-on-one strategic mentoring sessions. We have several types of labs that you can participate in with your other peers, both our Entrepreneurial Leadership and Mentoring Lab, which you can really get into the crux of how to run your business more effectively and become more competent. We have meaningful conversations that help with developing a culture that will work for you. I do weekly meditation and yoga that you can participate in to evolve yourself as you redesign your business. You can also sponsor this podcast. We're always looking for people to support our programming, build out our programming with us, and I especially love promoting you. You can get involved in all those different areas because when we mentor, you design a better life, a more fulfilling future as an entrepreneurial leader slash innovator, as a competent business owner slash practitioner, as a mentor slash role model, and as a human being and master of self. Every client starts with a desire to shift something, clarify something, overcome challenges, grow profitability. We started with one entrepreneur. We've mentored thousands. We're ready to work with you. When you show up, we're here. So to get started, go to wementor.com. You can also call me at 612-804-8920, or you can reach me through email, nancy@wementor.com. Get ready and take the next step today.